So for context, Disturbed is, I mean, a metal band, I think is probably the correct way to... Yeah, exactly.
Sup, nerds? It's basketball. Welcome to Horse, a basketball podcast about everything except for the wins and losses. My name is Mike Schubert, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, the Mavs season looking absolutely atrocious to the Sixers season looking absolutely atrocious. It's Adam Amawala. Adam, how's it going?
It's going better than it would be if I were a Mavs fan, which is hard to say as a Bulls fan, but it could be worse. So it's an important reminder to us all.
I was looking at the playoff odds yesterday. That 10 seed's looking like a lock. So it just means all at least is right in the world. At least, you know, death taxes the Bulls 10 seed.
Looking great. Just a forever play-in team. And, you know, the Cubs are 0-2 before anyone else has even played baseball. Baseball reference, we're having fun.
It's a great time. Well, also to have a great time is going to be this podcast where we're going to be talking about some fun basketball stuff. Now, to get ready for that fun basketball stuff, we got to go to the Teal Memorial Locker Room, which just always is a fun time. It's just always fun there. It's a good, wholesome locker room experience.
Yeah, good vibes.
Good vibes. You know who else has good vibes?
Our patrons.
Our patrons. Shout out to all of our patrons and shout out to our producer level patrons, especially those producer level patrons are Polly Bird, Salvatore Testa, Siobhan Ellsbury, Dunko Chasing Taco Falls, Bang Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry for 4,000 threes.
Bang! What if I did 4,000 bangs? That would be too many.
Probably. That'd be a good episode. Yeah. I think people would like
it. Just the whole episode.
Hi Trish,
is that.
Hi Allie. Exactly. Jason Derulo, Nick and Rachel, Sidney Crosby's a Vampire, Chelsea's Cousin, Ginger Spurs Boy, Balls to the Balls, Mats Furley, and you. Utah Jash. And you know what else has great vibes and helps the show?
I would say our sponsor.
It's our sponsor, Tap for a Cause. Tab check. I've got four open. What do you got?
At least 20, but a lot of them are for my That Actually Happened, so I feel okay about it.
That's good. And that's what Tab for a Cause can do, is it can make no matter what you're doing on the internet good, because every time you open a tab, it raises money for charity. You go to tabforacause.org/horse, you install it, and then you get pretty pictures of nature or architecture, and you might see some tiny ads, but those tiny ads raise money for charity, and you get to pick what charities. They have a whole bunch of different ones to support. It's pretty cool. I've been using it for years and years, and it's great. It's solid, and it's nice to be able to give money to charity with absolutely no effort. So head on over to tabforacause.org/horse to get signed up today. Now, unless you're listening on Patreon where you don't hear these inserted ads, you skip right over it. You're going to hear some inserted ads. Some of them will be read by us and others of them won't be. And once we finish those up, we will continue this episode of Horse. Unless you're a Patreon, we're going to keep talking right now. Adam, what's going on in your world?
All right, no new shows, but I'll give you a quick rattle off of the things that I have coming up. Thank you to everybody who came out in New Jersey at the Stress Factory. We had a great turnout for that one. Upcoming shows, as you're listening to this, I'm going to be out with Dane Cook for some shows. So this coming Friday, if you're listening when this comes out, which is March 29th, I will be in Niagara Falls, right over the border. If you live in Canada, come out to the show. And also, I'm so sorry, Donald Trump does not represent a lot of us. But it's right by Buffalo as well. So Niagara Falls on the 29th, which is, I think I said Friday, but it's actually this Saturday, excuse me. And then Sunday in Newark, New Jersey at NJ Pack, also with Dane Cook. That's going to be a cool hometown show. Then in April, I've got Minneapolis on Sunday, April 6th, Philadelphia on Saturday, April 12th. Then in May, I've got Cambridge, Mass on Wednesday, May 7th. Lake Charles, Louisiana at the Golden Nugget on Friday, May 16th with Dane Cook. Bozeman, Montana, May 30th. And then I got Vegas, June 2nd through 8th. What do you have coming up?
I still have got the same stuff that I had, where I've got my Midwest run in April and then a Buffalo and Montreal situation in early May. But the new addition is that we are live streaming the Des Moines show. So that's an April 13th show. We're going to live stream it and it'll come with a 7-day replay. So you don't actually have to watch it live if that day or time or both is bad for you. So you can go to schub.es/tour to get your tickets there. And it's like going to be a YouTube live thing with live chat replay and all that. So you can get in the mix and have fun with all the people watching from across the globe. And that show is going to be a half TNO, half Potter LaShow. We're going to start the third book in the sequel series for TNO. And apparently the beginning beginning of that book is really good, so it should be a fun time. And then we're going to do Wizard on Fast and Furious. So we're going to take Harry Potter characters and craft a Fast and Furious movie with them in it. I'm super stoked. And that, again, is at schub.es/tour. Alrighty, do we have an NB Q&A?
We do. This one comes from Matt or Matthew, aka Ginger Spursboy. And the question is, I was wondering what it was for each of you that got you into basketball fandom beyond just the Bulls or the Knicks. I'll let you go first. Ooh. What was it like your parents' interest in basketball? Like, how did it kind of form for you?
Yeah, I started playing basketball at age 5. I think age 5 is kind of when I did all of the sports, or at least like the core. So I started t-ball, I played soccer, I played basketball, and it kind of was on like a seasonal thing. I really liked it. We had a hoop in our driveway and everything. So I think initial fandom was just from playing the sport. And I think then just like I ended up watching the Knicks because my dad was a Knicks fan. We went to some games when I was younger. But then what really expanded it beyond just like, oh yeah, I like the Knicks, was actually the Knicks being bad made me get more into like basketball as a whole, because I was really getting more into it in like the mid-2000s, and we were quite bad. Like in the early 2000s, I remember me and our mutual friend Josh like really enjoying like Latrell Sprewell and those Knicks and stuff. And then when the Knicks got really bad, I was like, and then that's when I got into like Steve Nash and the Suns, and JJ Redick in I liked him at Duke, and then he was on the Magic. I started watching the Magic. So that kind of helped expound my basketball horizons. And then what got me like full-fledged all the way back into the Knicks boy I am today is Jeremy Lin's insanity. That was just like, all right, I'm locked in. Let's go. It's nice. Kind of the narrative for me. What about you?
For me, I mean, a lot of it was growing up in the Chicago area during the Michael Jordan time of basketball, like just through osmosis, you really couldn't avoid it. I think even people who were not sports fans at all got into it during that time. For me, it was not really from my parents necessarily, because like my dad is from India. He didn't grow up with basketball being part of the culture. My mom was a baseball fan. But I think initially it was spurred on by being aware of Michael Jordan. That then led me to start playing basketball. And it kind of went hand in hand, where like the more I got into basketball personally, the more I got into the sport. And then it also was like a very formative time in my life, that kind of break between the two three-peats, where there was all this speculation about like, is Michael Jordan going to come back? What's going to happen? And then once he came back, I was like full in all the time. I also was very into trading cards. So my sister would be like collecting basketball cards. And I feel like that helped me understand the league more than just the Bulls at that time. But I was for sure that kid who, once we got a hoop in our front yard, I was out there like every single day until it got dark. I even once broke a plate glass window. I believe Deb Mamawala talked about this incident. It was pretty controversial in Mamawala family.
It's a formative
lore. Like, I was warned.
It's a formative thing for you.
I had been warned multiple times to not shoot the ball in that direction, but I just didn't listen. But it was kind of a combination of those things. And then kind of to your point, I think after the Bulls' second three-peat, and once Jordan left, and then the Bulls just became like really bad for an extended period of time, that led me to get into the league as a whole more than I had been in the past. So, great question, and it's a fun time to be a Spurs fan, I'll tell you that much. And if they get Cooper Flagg, it's going to be rude.
Wild. Yeah. Wild.
As a basketball fan, I would love it, but as someone who wants my team to eventually win again, I would not.
Yeah. What I'm also realizing is that I had some like basketball media things when I was young. So I had that basketball children's book, which I've covered on Horse in the past, called Wacky Basketball Facts to Bounce Around. I've read that book a lot, and that was good. I just saw it the other day when I was home getting some baby books from my parents' place and bringing them up here for our baby. I had a Space Jam like first readers kind of book, and then I watched Space Jam because that came out like when I was like 5 or 6, so that was like very kind of perfect timing there. And then I think by being a young kid, like very young, when the Jordan stuff was going on, even not living in Chicago, it was such a phenomenon that like my earliest basketball, like pre-Knicks fandom stuff, was just like, I definitely knew Michael Jordan and the Bulls more. And then I also had a PlayStation 1 video game called NBA Shootout 98 that I played a lot. And that like was all those kind of things helped into my early basketball fandom as well. So nice. Yeah, it was kind of like not Knicks, Knicks, not Knicks, Knicks.
Right. And you are currently in a Knicks phase at this time.
Oh, yeah. And now it's the weird uncharted territories of Knicks in contention? Question mark?
Yeah.
But it's good. It's good. Okay. Should we get into Full Court Press? Get out like the news?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. There's a bunch of different things happening. And let's first get into what I had sort of alluded to in the introduction, which is that somehow the Mavs season has gotten worse in that everybody's hurt now. Mm-hmm. And also one of the like more innocuous trades that the Mavs made this year was that they traded away Quentin Grimes for Caleb Martin, which at the time just seemed kind of like a deal that made sense. Like the Sixers were kind of looking to get off that contract. Caleb Martin, I think, has been hurt a lot. But then the Mavs was like, oh, they might not re-sign Quentin Grimes. So they're kind of exchanging similar production players, but one guy's on a more sensible contract.
And Caleb Martin is a good fit for a team that is competing and trying to go back to the finals. And he's like a good complementary piece. But not so much when you're playing without Luka Doncic and Anthony Davis and everybody else.
Yes. And then also, just to pour salt in the wound, though, Quentin Grimes on the Sixers has been balling the hell out. He's like getting multiple 40-point games. He's kind of running the offense, which in the past he was more of like a 3-and-D guy. And it's cool to see. I like Quentin Grimes. He used to be a Knick. He went to Kelly's high school, so I'll always have a soft spot for him. But it's just another thing. Like, if you couldn't dogpile Nico Harrison for enough already, now you're like, and he traded Quentin Grimes.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs over there in Mavs land.
Right. And they have so few available players because of injuries and such. I think they have like 8 active players. And if they get down to 7, they will have to forfeit games, which I've never seen in my entire life watching basketball. I've never seen a forfeit happen.
No, I think we've talked about that college game where the team ended up playing with like 3 players because all their players got ejected or fouled out or whatever. But
right. But you could at least start that game. This is like, we would have to cancel the Mavs game. Like they're a rec softball league or something. Oh, we don't have enough guys. And
yeah, do they get to just like pick someone from the other team to come play with? like a pickup game?
Yeah, like, does the other team just like run a scrimmage? Yeah, like, it's so bizarre. They can't add more people because of contract rules. Like they're over the tax apron kind of thing. So they can't add more people. They're asking the NBA for financial alleviation and the league said no.
It's just good.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. There was a video of them with before the game with, I think, 6 people out there shooting around because that's all they had.
So that was the Mavs versus Sixers game. Right. So that's a perfect segue in that the Sixers kind of are doing a similar thing to what the Spurs are doing, where like things aren't looking good. So they're kind of end of the seasoning people with injuries and stuff. And they shut down Paul George, which the timing is so funny because Paul George, and you and I talked about this, I think not on the podcast, but just us texting. I was like, Paul George really shouldn't be doing his podcast right now. Like, I'm very pro let NBA players do their podcasts because like they have enough free time and they're not doing any of their work. Like us for this podcast, we do all of the work. Kensei does the editing and we do everything else and it takes time. Mm-hmm. And Paul George, like, it's literally, he's just talking on the mic and that's it. So, like, maybe
I don't think Podcast P is removing his mouth sounds from the edit.
No, I think, and if they are, Paul's not doing it. Paul doesn't know what Logic Pro X is. Yeah. Paul doesn't know any sort of audio tools are. Paul doesn't know what an RSS feed is. Like, he's getting on the mic for max 2 hours a week, and it's not a big deal, given that these players usually have enough free time or an off day or whatever to make it happen. But when you're in a situation where your team's doing so bad, and it's kind of your fault, like, it's not his fault that the Sixers are bad. It's his fault that the Sixers are this bad, because you have injuries to a bunch of other dudes, but, like, you're still supposed to be Paul George, and you haven't really been Paul George from a basketball perspective. So he shuts down Podcast P to focus on trying to bring a championship to the Sixers, and he announces this when they're, like, 18 games under 500. And then he gets shut down for the rest of the season injury-wise, and my thought is, should we bring back Podcast P?
You can't like, are now. We bring I mean, he should. What else
you bring
is he doing?
Like, you should. What better time now than I literally can't play basketball?
Right.
Let me bring back Podcast P.
Oh, gosh.
It's wild. Yeah. It's wild. And I think it especially is weird just in that, like, earlier in the season, he was like airing out grievances and stuff on the pod. Like, it's not, I'm never going to tell Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart to shut down the podcast because, like, they're just like chopping it up and it's good vibes. But, like, something about Podcast P just didn't have as good of vibes to where when things are going bad basketball wise, you're like, maybe you stop the podcast, sir.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And you have to think that the team in the front office were in his ear at some point about, like, hey, maybe don't divulge a bunch of stuff that happens in the locker room. Publicly.
Right. And I guess it's different. I know he had the show before, but it's different for Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart because, like, Jalen Brunson's the leader of the team and Josh Hart is like the funniest, most sociable guy on the team. Whereas Paul George is like, he's the new guy. And there's already talks of, even before the season started, like, is he overpaid and blah, blah, blah. So it's just like a weird energy to bring.
Yep.
Now, other things around the league. Did you see the J.B. Bickerstaff rant about the referees disrespecting the Detroit Pistons?
I did. And then I believe there's also like a fake tweet about how much he got fined and someone like read it on the air. I don't know if it's like NBA Centel or whatever it was, but it was a whole thing. But yes, go ahead and tell the people if they missed it.
I mean, basically, the Pistons had a game where the calls were just quite bad. Pretty bad stuff, but most notably, the refs were just like ready to eject people. And, you know, they're giving the people what they want. You know, people pay their hard-earned money to see referees eject NBA players from games. It's our favorite part of every game. It's such a good pastime. But there was something where, like, there was an argument about particular calls of, like, there was a foul call and then the refs were setting up the free throw as if it was like a flagrant foul or a technical foul, but it wasn't. And Cade Cunningham was like having an argument with the ref that they were like, the refs were actively messing something up. Mm-hmm. Cade Cunningham on the Pistons let them know they're messing something up. They kind of refused to admit it. He had to get a little angry with them. They realized their mistake, but then they gave him a tech for like passionately telling them they were messing up. And then he had gotten a second one. So then he got ejected for in like the third quarter of an intense game. It was just weird. And then their coach, JB Bickerstaff, just went off on him during the postgame thing. We could put a link to it because it's like, it's quite lengthy, but he says like, we're not going to be disrespected and we're not going to stand for this. And he said we're bringing a good thing to the league by having these young players developing. And he's not wrong. Like, the Pistons are fun and it's good that the Pistons are good again. And, you know, I love this. I love a coach getting behind a microphone and knowing this will cost me $100,000, but I got to stand up for my guys.
Yeah, listen, I mean, we've talked about it many times before. Refs and umpires and, you know, whatever they're called in whatever sport it is, like, they do have a very difficult job. There's also human error involved the same way that, like, basketball players don't make every single shot they take. Like, that's a real thing. But the level of arrogance, I think, is really what bothers me about a lot of, you know, officiants is not the right word. That sounds like a wedding. But the point is, people in officiating, it's always this like small town cop energy of like,
yes,
not ever admitting that you're wrong and being very proud and like sticking up for your coworkers, even when they're objectively doing a bad job. And to your point, like, yes, it's a hard job, but they're also paid very well. They're like well taken care of. And their job is to be like seen and not heard, generally speaking, like making yourself involved. That's why I always hated Joey Crawford. It was like he wanted the focus to be on him rather than the game. And there's MLB umpires like that. Shout out Angel Hernandez. May you never work a game again. So, yeah, I credit to JB Bickerstaff because that is, no matter how much money you're making, you can't just sneeze at like $100,000 or $50,000 when you get fined.
Yeah. It's got to be a factor into coaches' salaries is like, hey, we're paying you X million dollars a year because like twice a season, you have to argue that the refs are destroying your team and it's going to cost you $50,000.
I am glad that it at least goes to charity. It's like the ultimate swear jar.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. For anyone who doesn't know, any NBA fine, they donate it to charity, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, I do think if you're a referee, you can be known if you do cool, fun things. Like, I think it's Bill Kennedy who always does the like sassy deliveries for the overturning of the calls and like hypes it up with the crowd. That's fun. Like when he does the thing where it's like, on the call, there was a travel, but before the travel, Curry was fouled by Jordan Poole, meaning the ball goes to the Warriors. And like the crowd, like that's
it's fun, but he is still like drawing attention to himself by doing that.
But at least it's for that. Like, yeah. I'll take that. I will not take everyone knowing who Scott Foster is because he is like a terrible ref and accused of throwing games.
Yeah.
All right. So I'd said Jordan Poole quickly because I wanted to get on something quickly. Did you see the Jordan Poole game winner that he made? Just like the ill-advised shot, but it ended up working out.
No, but that does sound like Jordan Poole.
He basically, they were down two, I think, and he shot a three, which is what you want to do. But he shot it with like 4.5 seconds left on the clock, which is like a bit too much. And he shot it from like 30 feet. Like he was many, many steps back from three. He nailed it. So they won. But then he hits what he's now been doing. There's all, they've already talked about this with Jordan Poole, like the pool party. But he does the celebration now where he holds his nose and moves his arms like he's at a pool party. And it's so forced.
Yeah, and if you were hearing weird audio there, that was Mike plugging his nose as he did the pool party celebration.
Gotta do it.
Yeah.
But, like, it's such a forced celebration that I don't like it, and I wanted to get your read on it. Because I feel like pool party is a cool nickname, but if you're doing your own celebration based on a nickname someone gave you, it feels a little like when you give yourself a nickname.
I also think it's very funny that, like, he's a basketball player whose name is Jordan Poole, and he's choosing to lean into the pool instead of leaning into the Jordan. Like, that's objectively a very funny thing.
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be like if Steph Curry did the James Harden chef cooking pot thing because they call him Chef Curry. Like, you can't give yourself a nickname. You can't give yourself a celebration based off your own nickname. Like, it has to be different, I feel.
Yeah, I do think it's much better when someone else does it on your behalf. Like, it feels in the same way that, like, a lot of Jason Tatum's personality feels like he's just trying to, like, do someone else's personality and it comes off feeling forced. I think those celebrations do also. I mean, and the other thing is, like, the Wizards are so bad.
Except they've been, like, weirdly good in the past, like, 2 weeks. Like, since the trade deadline, since they got Marcus Smart and since they got Chris Middleton, they went on, like, a 6-4 run. Like, at the time of recording, I think they're, like, in their last 10 games, they're 6 wins, 4 losses.
Well, they better stop if they want Cooper Flagg.
I think they were so bad at the beginning of the year that they'll be okay.
That is the funny thing about sports is, like, even the worst team in the league will weirdly have, like, a week or two stretch where they look great, and the best team in the league will usually have a week or two stretch where they look like they can't ever win again.
The Spurs just beat the Knicks last night with some dude I've literally never heard of shooting 93% from the field.
Oh, my God.
Like, he went, like, 12 of 13 or something. Like, just absurd. Like, things happen. Okay, last final thing. You as a Bulls fan needed to get your thought. Did you hear about what happened to the Bulls banners with the Disturbed concert?
I did. And apparently the people in Disturbed are from Chicago and are Bulls fans. Okay. So, like, they were also happy about it.
Yeah.
Was there actual, like, legitimate damage? I saw the video of the... So for context, Disturbed is, I mean, a metal band, I think is probably the correct way to... Yeah, exactly. And they had wild pyrotechnics during their show at the United Center. And the flames were, like, shooting up towards the banners. My takeaway, having read some stuff about this, is, like, it's not on Disturbed. It's on the facility to understand what the show involves.
Yes.
And so if there was any damage done, that's kind of on the people who run the United Center to understand.
I think three of them had some sort of, like, burn marks on them.
Oh,
so I guess they got to, like, it would be very interesting because obviously those banners are old. So, like, if you're trying to... You have to do it like it's like a museum when they're like restoring a painting. Like, they have to look exactly
the same.
Hopefully
they do it better than when that woman restored the Jesus fresco.
Yeah, or better than whatever player recently got retired or something. They raised a banner upside down recently in some basketball game. Yeah, so, like, I don't know. It's so fascinating to me that they're going to have to try to make the banners look identical. And the next time I'm at a Chicago Bulls game, if ever, like, I'm going to be looking and be like, the 92 banner, the white, doesn't look off-white enough.
Yeah, and my reaction to it was I was disturbed.
Oh, yes. And with that, we conclude Full Court Press. Get it like the news. Real quick, before we do, that actually happened. Breaking news. It broke as we were recording. The Boston Celtics have been sold for $6.1 billion.
That's a lot of money.
Making them the most expensive North American sports franchise to ever be sold. So they sold them to some person that also has Boston ties because, of course, but new ownership.
Wow.
That's a lot of money. And here's what I just got to say real quick, because I saw this on Blue Sky. The Athletic posted it, and at least 50% of the replies were people being like, where are the Yankees? Wait, I don't think the Mercury and the Phoenix would be a top 10. What's going on? The Cowboys aren't on this list. People's reading comprehension is so terrible, because it was a top 10 list on this post of most sales, like highest sales of sports franchises, not valuations. And like 50% of the replies are like, this list is wrong. People, it's alarming how stupid people are. It sucks. It really sucks.
People just have no attention span, and so they get angry before they read things.
It's wild, truly wild. Yeah. Anyway, brighten my day with if that actually happens.
I will. It's a kind of a somber one, but I think ultimately an uplifting one. For today's That Actually Happened, I'm going to be talking about the incredible life of former NBA player and entrepreneur Junior Bridgman, who recently passed away at the age of 71. To be honest with you, I actually didn't know who Junior Bridgman was.
Same.
And I found out about his passing when Shaq, to whom Bridgman was a mentor, honored him on an episode of Inside the NBA. To set the stage for this story and to give you the context that I had, here's Shaq talking about what Bridgman meant to him.
Yeah, this one really hit hard for me. You know, a lot of people don't know this, but I've patterned my whole business acumen after Junior Bridgman. You know, they always tell us stories about how 75% of athletes, 0 to 5 years after they're done playing, go broke. And I never wanted to be that. So I always started looking at people. Michael, of course, Magic. But I remember one time the Forbes list came out, and I was like, oh, I know, I'm on this list, all the commercials I do. And I saw his name. I reached out to him and we started talking, and you know, he had Wendy's, I started Big Chicken, you know, Pepsi and Coke. So everything that he did, I tried to pattern after him. I just talked to him the other day because we were getting ready to do business. So my condolences goes out to his partner, Charles, to his family, his daughter, his son. But this one really hit hard for me because he was definitely somebody that I looked up to. I know I get a lot of credit. Oh, you do this and you do that. If it wasn't for Bridgman, I wouldn't have known where to start. Because I watched this man, I was like, man, and I'm always the type I use jealousy as motivation. Like, man, this man got 400 Wendy's, let me do something. This man got 3 distributors. So like I used that, and I had a conversation with him, and he was so nice to me. I used to go to his function that he held during the Derby in Louisville. It was just a nice, humble young man, and he gave me all his secrets. Like he
didn't gatekeep, he really shared it with
me. He opened the book and was like, hey, matter of fact, I'll help you, I'll make a call for you. It's actually how I got into Papa John's also, because he lives in Louisville and, you know, he knew it. So, you know, it was definitely a dear friend. And I got the news at home and I had to sit down for a while. And I actually forgot we had to work. That's why I was kind of running late. But this one hit hard. So Charles, the Bridgman family, my condolences goes out. This one hurts a lot.
So obviously there's a lot to unpack there, but let's start from the beginning. Ulysses Lee Jr. Bridgman was born in East Chicago, Indiana, which, let's face it, is a very confusing name for a place. but in any event, he was born in Indiana in 1953 to very humble beginnings. His father was a steel mill worker and his mother was a homemaker, but Bridgman excelled in basketball. And in 1971, he led his high school team to an undefeated season and state championship, finishing 29-0. It was during this time that Bridgman's work ethic became apparent, in many ways out of necessity due to his family's limited financial means. He spent his summers working odd jobs, and after his high school career, Bridgman received a scholarship to play his college ball at Louisville and would spend his summers working at a farm equipment manufacturer, a steel cutting company, and working a brutal midnight to 7 a.m. shift at a Ford truck plant several times a week.
Oh my gosh. Ugh.
Yes, that is the correct response to all of that. Despite his busy work schedule in his 3 seasons at Louisville, he averaged 15.5 points, 7.6 rebounds, and 2.7 assists. Bear in mind, this was in a day and age where game scores were significantly lower, in part due to the style of play, and in part because the three-point line literally wouldn't be introduced to NCAA basketball until 1986, which shocked me, by the way. I knew it was like later than I thought. It was introduced in the NBA during the 1979-1980 season, but 1986 feels so late.
Yeah, the NCAA's got some weird stuff. Like, it's surprisingly late when dunking was allowed.
Right.
Like, they got rid of dunking in 67 because Kareem Abdul-Jabbar happened to be black. Mm-hmm. And then I'm pretty sure it was, like, a similar timeline to when the three-point line was instituted that they let people dunk again. So, yeah, NCAA's got some weird stuff. Recording this on March 20th, March Madness begins today, and I could not care less. I guess, actually, I have one percentage of caring because the people who do the ads for my podcasts did a thing where they're like, hey, everyone can do like a free bracket and we're going to give gift cards to the top two placing teams. So I did submit a bracket. It is mostly a vibes bracket.
Yeah, I'm not a hater about it. Like, I think it's fun every year to watch games and see the storylines of people like going from complete no names to heroes in the matter of a week or two. So I say, you know, if you enjoy it, good for you. I need to fill up my bracket literally in the next like 45 minutes or it won't get submitted. sadly, I'm probably going to pick Duke. I feel like Cooper Flag is going to go off.
I pick Duke every year. I pick him every year, every single year. But yeah, the format of March Madness is fun. Single elimination is fun. Upsets are fun. The actual product, like the actual basketball, disgusting, abhorrent, unwatchable.
Yes and no. I think what's cool about it is the extreme passion of the fans. Obviously, like the best NCAA game is not going to touch the best NBA game. But what you'll never see is people not trying. And so there's something to be said for that. So, you know.
Yeah, you will also not see people making shots at a high percentage.
Well. All right, let's move on. So all that to say, 15-7-3 don't necessarily sound like earth-shattering stats nowadays, but it was very impressive in that era of basketball. While his Louisville Cardinals never won the national title during his tenure there, they did make it to the Final Four during his senior year and lost a heartbreaker to eventual champions UCLA, led by legendary coach John Wooden, who would win his 10th and final championship that season. After his college days, Bridgman declared for the NBA draft and was selected by the Los Angeles Lakers 8th overall. However, Bridgman never played a game for the Lakers because 3 weeks after the draft, he was traded to Milwaukee in one of the biggest blockbuster trades of that era when he and three other Bucks were shipped to LA for Walt Wesley and the aforementioned
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar,
yep. Bridgman would go on to have a strong 12-year NBA career, playing primarily for the Bucks, as well as a brief stint with the Clippers. While he was never considered a star player, many people believe that if the Sixth Man Award had existed earlier, Bridgman might have won it multiple times. The award was introduced during the 1982-1983 season, after Bridgman had begun to decline in productivity. But over the course of his 12-year pro career, Bridgman averaged double-digit points in 9 of those 12, and finished his career with an average of 13.6 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 2.4 assists.
He's putting up legit numbers.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's got to suck just to be in the league when they invent something you would have been perfect for after the fact. Like, yeah. It's got to stink to
and
be
also,
like,
you know, bigger salaries, which we're going to get into right
now. Oh, yeah. I mean, yes, that's got to be a thing you're kicking yourself for.
So the real story of Junior Bridgman is not what he did during his NBA career. It's what he did after. Amazingly, despite his productivity, Bridgman never made more than $350,000 during an NBA season.
Damn.
For reference, this year, the NBA's minimum salary is $1.1 million. Even taking inflation into account, $350,000 in those days would equal about $1.5 million today. So it's like wildly larger than it was at that time, which, you know, makes sense. Obviously, the NBA is a lot more lucrative than it used to be. In any case, always business-minded, Bridgman didn't wait until his playing days were over to start lining up his next moves, and in the off-seasons, he worked to learn the business model of Wendy's fast food restaurants. So after his NBA career was over, he invested in then-upstart Wendy's and would go on to own over 160 Wendy's and 120 Chili's locations throughout the U.S., In a 2024 ESPN piece written by Baxter Holmes, which I reference a lot in this, and I will also share the article, he shares a funny moment in 1988 when Bridgman was working at one of his Wendy's locations. So a woman recognized him from his NBA career, and they have a conversation. And then a couple days later, while Bridgman is driving home, he hears a female caller on a radio show talking about how she had been served at a Wendy's by a former Bucks player and commenting on what a shame it was that after their playing careers were over, many players had to resort to working at fast food restaurants. Bridgman obviously realized that she was talking about him. And while in his case, he was not working at a Wendy's, but was the owner of multiple franchises, he understood her point. And he wasn't just like undercover bossing it. Apparently, he took a real interest in getting his hands dirty, literally and figuratively, and understanding the business he was investing in. According to former Bucks teammate Sidney Moncrief, quote, he'd be working in the restaurant like he was an hourly worker. I witnessed that. I was thinking, what the heck is he doing in there flipping burgers, washing dishes, and he had those work pants on. But he understood the value of learning thoroughly what you're investing in. Very, very hands-on. He wanted to know where every check was going. When money went out, he wanted to feel that, end quote. And a lot of people are aware, I think in an amorphous way, that retired athletes tend to lose a lot, if not all of their money after their careers end. But I think very few people, including myself, understand how truly pervasive this is. In fact, according to Craig Brown, an NKSFB sports business division partner, an astonishing 78% of professional athletes go broke after just 3 years of retirement.
That's wild. And that's like a current stat, like current players still?
As of a year ago, yeah.
That's wild.
It's incredible. And it's unclear what gave Bridgman the foresight to understand how to properly set himself up for success in his post-NBA life, but whatever it was, he had it in droves. Even after his enormous success franchising restaurants, he was never satisfied and would later sell the majority of his franchises to a private buyer and then use that money to start a Coca-Cola bottling company to distribute their beverages. It was extremely successful and lucrative, and by 2016, Bridgman ranked behind only Arnold Palmer, David Beckham, and the GOAT himself, Michael Jordan, as the wealthiest former athletes alive.
I mean, that says it all. Like, because all those dudes were able to utilize.
Exactly. They monetized their sports careers. He didn't.
Right. And it's all like advertising deals. Like, it's just proof you and I had not heard of this dude until Shaq talked about him on TNT.
Yeah. And to your point, it's like all those people, their fame from their sport. And obviously good investments, but mostly their fame is what led to their money. In this case, it was like Bridgman used the NBA as seed money to start a completely different career in which him being a former NBA player had no bearing on whether or not he would be successful.
Yeah, it's like the cooler version of when you find out like a billionaire like Jeff Bezos, it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, he started Amazon, you know, on his own. It's like, yeah, but he also had a $300,000 loan from his parents. Like this dude's $300,000 loan from his parents was him dunking on fools.
Yeah.
That's way cooler.
Well, and that's a perfect transition to this next part, which is that like, I think you and I have been pretty clear on our stance on billionaires, generally speaking.
Shouldn't exist.
But if there is such a thing as a good billionaire, I'm pretty sure it was Junior Bridgman. Rather than sit around counting his money.
I mean, there's no way he got to be a billionaire, though, yeah? Like,
oh, yeah.
He hit a billion?
Oh, yeah, over.
What?
I think $1.4 billion was like his net worth when he passed.
What? Yeah. Whoa. It's amazing. Okay.
But yeah, you know, rather than sit around counting his money and, you know, actively enabling fascism, Bridgman used his power and wealth to impart what he had learned to other athletes, cautioning them on what could occur if they didn't plan ahead as he had. So starting in the early 1990s, Bridgman spoke both formally and informally to rookies and veterans, sharing his wisdom and insight. He would later become a pioneer in teaching athletes the value of financial literacy, which is frankly lacking not only amongst professional athletes, but in general. Like I see it a lot in my 100%. Field. I'm sure you do as well. The lack of basic understanding of like building credit, managing your money and planning for retirement is astonishing to me. But I'm also fortunate that I received great guidance from my parents and so many people don't have that benefit. Like I've always felt very strongly that financial literacy should be taught in high school. It should absolutely be like a required gen ed if you go to college. And Bridgman was quoted as saying, "What I'm scared and concerned about now is you start to get that feeling that I've got so much money that I really can't blow it all. And that's the first step in blowing it all." And he's absolutely right. Like if you start living your life like you're always going to be making pro athlete money, when it goes away, you are in big trouble if you haven't lined up your next moves. Around this same time in the 90s, the NBA Players Association, realizing the value in what Bridgman was building, asked him to create a program to introduce interested players to the restaurant business, and he obliged, designing a course that lasted 4 days. While only five of the 30 players who attended the program stayed in the business, over the course of that program, they learned finances and day-to-day operations. And Bridgman made a huge impact on the basketball community. And as his wealth grew, he continued to stay engaged. He put most of his money away in trust for his family, in addition to allocating a large portion of it to charities, focusing on youth education and community development. So today I wanted to give you a window into the extraordinary life of a man who came from nothing, earned everything, and gave back to the basketball community until the very end. While it's very sad, it is somewhat fitting that Bridgman's sudden passing took place at a charity event. And as far as I'm concerned, if more billionaires were like him, mentors and philanthropists first and billionaires second, the world would be a much better place. And that is Junior Bridgman. And that actually happened.
Wow. Cool. Look, fun facts. Didn't know that about him. And now I'll, you know, feel a little different when if I'm ever eating at a Wendy's.
Yeah. Or a Chili's.
I don't think you'll ever find Mike Schubert eating at a Chili's.
I went there last Friday.
Why?
We went because it was like, we kept seeing that it was like a TikTok thing and people were like, we like Chili's again. And like, it's good again. And we were like, let's see. And it was fine. And then I felt really awful the whole next day. And I won't eat there again.
They microwave the food.
Of course.
Like, God, I think it's because I worked in the restaurant industry that I just know, like, you can't do it. But look, Shout out to you. This is just another reason why I'm glad I've never downloaded TikTok. All right, now it's time for my 3-on-3.
1, 2, 3. 3, 2, 1. 3-on-3.
This 3-on-3 is basically, it's all an excuse to talk about one of them. And then I found other things. But there's this one thing, it's a clip that I've always loved, and we'll work our way to it. But what I've done here, it was also inspired by something that's been fun on the Knicks this season. I'm doing a 3-on-3 all around players getting interviewed after the game.
Okay.
But it's going to be the three best times that another player has grabbed the mic and, you know, is
top three interruptions.
And then top three, like, video bombs.
Okay.
So when someone's interviewing and then someone, like, is in the background doing something like that.
Fun.
The
okay,
number
like
one
it.
Player grabbing the mic thing is what has really what I want to lead to. So I want to start with the top video bombs. Now, there okay. is a full, like, compilation of these that I'm going to put on the episode page of horsehoops.com, and I'm also going to send to you in the chat, and I'll tell you where to go in the video so that you can watch these.
Okay.
But there's like a great big compilation of them, and it's super fun, and I had a great time watching it, and it was hard not to pick all of them to make mm-hmm. this like a top, you know, not a 3-on-3, but like a 20-on-20. So, Adam, if you could go to 4 minutes and 40 seconds in this video,
okay.
We're going to do our number three pick. The number three pick is LeBron James doing a surprise. It completely took me by surprise. His bomb of Anthony Davis.
You know what he's doing? It's like the, for American football fans, it's like the Victor Cruz cha-cha dance.
So we'll put the clip of this because there's an audio component to it as well. But basically, he is walking in the background. It's a bubble game. Anthony Davis is being interviewed. And LeBron is like just about to leave the frame. And just like incredible court awareness from LeBron. He stops like right at the edge of the frame, does a little cha-cha, and starts singing along to Smooth Operator, which is playing in the arena music. I don't know if there like is a screen on the camera so LeBron can see that he's perfectly in frame, but it is astonishing. Like, he stops at the exact right moment and then busts out a Smooth Operator. It's incredible. Phenomenal stuff.
I love it.
It's just so good. And like LeBron and AD have a history of video bombing each other. So for him to do it, like you see Anthony Davis laugh instantly. Like he clearly is used to this happening.
Yeah.
So it's just really good. For number two, if you could go to 1 minute and 27 seconds in this video, Adam, our number two one is Kevin Love for the Minnesota Timberwolves doing a little interview about his great performance. And then
looks like Ronnie Turiaf held him hostage.
Rhody Turiaf runs in, throws a towel over his head, and like closes it down on either side. So
looks
you're
like
right.
A hostage video.
Yeah, it looks like he doesn't just put a towel on top of his head, because that's a common thing, and like the Thunder have been doing that this season where they're like putting towels on the back of the guy. He puts a towel like completely over his head and face and chin, grabs it on either side. There is like air underneath, but like if he goes a little tighter, he's gonna look like Jack Bauer from 24. Like puts it over his head and then screams into the microphone, triple double, yes, and then runs in the back. The best, though, is that Kevin Hart keeps doing the interview with the towel over his head. He finishes his sentence.
I want to just really quick.
Correct.
You did say Kevin Hart, which I'm shocked.
Oh, sorry. No, no.
Because I know you dislike him.
Oh, no. I meant Kevin Love. I'm so sorry. That sucks. Leave it in. Leave it in. I meant Kevin Love. Gosh, that's disappointing.
Well, Love, Hart. I mean, those things are connected.
And also, what sucked is when I was doing this research, like so many YouTube videos were like, Kevin Hart, funny NBA interview. And I was like, none of these are funny. It's impossible. None of them are funny. But yeah, Kevin Love continues the interview like a champ, and the reporter has to remove the towel. Just commitment to the bit. Really fun stuff.
Love it.
Sam, so we just wanted to come in and do the best job we could, and we felt we did a good
triple double. Yes.
We felt we did a good job tonight.
And we love a Rhony Turiaf appearance.
Oh, yeah.
Shout out to Rhony. except for when he was on that.
I think it was Ronnie. It looks like Ronnie, but I think they said Ronnie.
Oh, I thought he pronounced it Roni.
I could be wrong.
All right, let's see. Roni Turioff slash Roni Turioff.
Macaroni, I think.
I'm going to pull it up on Basketball Reference to see. According to the Basketball Reference pronunciation page, it is Roni Turioff.
Okay, all right. I stand corrected. So,
I know my Knicks. He was on the Knicks for one bright, shining year.
Yeah, he was always like a good bench guy.
Yeah,
he was like a good hype-up guy.
Yeah, he's fun to have. You don't want him playing significant minutes. And in 2008-2009, he came in 15th place in voting for Defensive Player of the Year. So
there you go.
There you go.
Hang your hat on.
Put that
something
in
to hang
the
your
rafters.
Towel on.
All right.
But don't put it in the rafters too close to a Disturbed concert.
Oh my gosh, no. All right. The number one is just the collective lifetime achievement award to the Heatles era of the Miami Heat, because over the course of the 4 years that LeBron was there, these dudes video bombed each other relentlessly. If you watch this compilation video, which is 5 minutes and 48 seconds, at least half of them are from this era of the Heat. You have like ones that have turned into famous memes of like Chris Bosh popping up and looking like a dinosaur. You've got LeBron doing the like big grin, bugging out eyes face that he did a couple of different times. They would do the things where they would throw towels like from off frame or from way behind in the frame. Dwayne Wade once did a cartwheel behind LeBron James. Like, they do all sorts of stuff. There's compilations on YouTube of like just the Heat video bombs. And what's very fun is that it's usually the same sideline reporter for the Heat. So for certain ones, he has big reactions. Like when Dwayne Wade did the cartwheel, he was like, whoa, we've really ramped it up, guys. Like,
yeah.
They were just absolutely relentless with these. And it was really fun, especially because the team was so good. Like, this team was so good, they were knocking the doors off of everyone, winning games by 30 points, and then like video bombing, memeing each other throughout. Just incredible stuff.
Yeah, I feel like the more time goes on, the more I appreciate them, because at the time I just hated them.
I'm so upset that I was like in high school and college during this time, because I was so busy. I was so busy, I did not like fully get to watch and appreciate them as much as I wish I could have.
I would have loved to have seen that in person. I'm sure the tickets were egregious. And like, also, this was at a time in our lives where we didn't really have money. But like,
no,
man.
Because it was during college, like, and they were in the East. So they would come to the Rockets once a year.
Yeah.
And it usually didn't work out, like, price-wise, schedule-wise, whatever. And that summer when I graduated, I was like, ah, I've graduated. I have disposable income. I'm going to go to a Heatles game. And then LeBron signed with the Cavs. I was so... It's like legit top five regret of my life. Like, no joking. 100% earnest.
Yeah, totally fair.
Gosh. Okay, so let's get to now the best times a player has grabbed the mic. And these are all like kind of different in terms of how we're using the definition of player grab the mic, but they're all very fun. For number three, we are also going to the bubble era of the NBA. I think this was from post-bubble, but pre-people back in arenas.
Gotcha.
And it is when Klay Thompson was doing hashtag reporter Klay and interviewed Steph Curry. So there was a thing that the Warriors did called hashtag reporter Klay, where Klay, when he was doing his long injury rehab, like when he was out of the league for like 3 years, he did a thing where he was like a color commentator and broadcaster for at least this one game. I think it was for a couple of games with the Warriors. So he was like helping call the game. They were cutting to him for media stuff like before the game and after the game. So he conducts a post-game interview with Steph Curry and, you know, asking some questions. It's fun. But then he concludes this interview with a really hard-hitting question for Steph Curry. He asks him, who is a better color commentator, Del Curry or Michael Thompson? Both of these guys are these people's fathers, and both of them are color commentators for their respective teams that they used to play for. So Del Curry does color commentating for the Hornets. I don't know if he still does it, at least at the time.
Either way, he did. Yeah,
he did. And then Michael Thompson, I believe, does it for the Warriors still, but he was on the Lakers. He was never on the Warriors, so maybe I misspoke earlier. But
in any case, they have dads who do commentate.
They have dads who do color commentating, and Steph says that he's got to go with Del Curry, and Klay goes, and gets angry and like smacks away his microphone and like leaves.
The only thing that could have been better than that is if he pulled a deep cut and asked Steph Curry his thoughts about scaffolding.
Oh, if only. But what's funny is they're doing this interview. Klay like angrily leaves, but he's like not very far away from Steph. Like Steph is like on the court, and it's like one of those big like long extended tripod things because of COVID times. But then Klay's just like a couple rows up in the crowd, and then they both end up like walking in the same direction towards the tunnel to leave. It's great. It's perfect. It's wonderful. So for number two, we're going to go for the thing that happened this season. And it's OG Anunoby continuing to grab the microphone from Alan Hahn in postgame interviews. Did you see this going on this season?
No.
So I don't know what it is about OG. He's great. He's so funny. Like genuinely a hilarious person. And whatever has possessed him to do this, I don't know if it's a bit or if it's because he's kind of awkward. I think it's the latter. But there were a couple of games this season where Alan Hahn is one of the MSG Knicks broadcasters, and he does some of the post-game interviews on the court, much like I think he might have done the one when you and I were at that game when the Knicks beat the Pacers.
When Brunson was talking about his All-Star selection.
He was getting choked up. So it's like that kind of interview. And there was one game where Alan Hahn is like interviewing OG, and every time he points the microphone towards OG's mouth for him to answer, OG like grabs it and then like holds it and puts it to his mouth to go.
Right.
And Alan Hahn like clearly was like bothered by this. He says something to OG where it's like, hey, you don't have to grab the mic. Like I'll just point it at you.
Yeah.
And then OG, like the next question, still grabs it. and that's why OG's not mean. He's not a jerk. Like I think this is just pure like Ricky Bobby, I don't know what to do with my hands energy. Mm-hmm. And he still grabbed it. So then the next time he did it, like the other Knick players are making fun of him for it. Alan Hahn is like, I don't know if he says something or OG, like it is addressed before the interview starts. Like you don't have to grab the microphone. But then while he's getting interviewed, Karl-Anthony Towns in the background screaming like, grab the mic, grab the mic, grab the mic.
Oh my God.
Then the next time it happens.
Oh my God.
Look, I am all here for Kat not doing the thing where he talks with a deep voice on purpose.
I like Big Purr.
Talk as you talk, Kat. Don't let people make fun of you. Talk as you speak. Speak as naturally. Don't do the thing where you, because like, you don't have to, oh, hey, it's me, Carl Anthony Towns. It'd be like if I was like, hey guys, welcome to Horse. It's a basketball podcast. Like, you can put on a thing to try to sound cooler. Just be you, man. Be you. But anyway, Kat from the background is like, grab the mic, grab the mic. The third time that this happens, Alan Hahn has a separate microphone for OG Anunoby to use.
Be funny if it's like labeled with OG.
They labeled it MSOG on it so that he would have his own microphone.
Really
so just
great.
Like a really good bit, really good vibes around the Knicks this season and in this era. And the OG stuff is good. I was so hyped for when we got OG from a basketball and a vibes perspective. And it's really good to see him thriving in both areas.
Oh, he's been great.
In always. So the number one, this is what I really wanted to do this all. Because it's such a fun clip. And it's something that I think to me, it's one of those things that like plays on repeat in my brain every now and then. Have you seen when John Wall interviewed Bradley Beal post game?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm going to just send you the link to this and just, it's 40 seconds. Just watch it and give me your thoughts.
All right.
Cause it's God, it's just so delightful.
Do you want to do the rest of this interview? Are you sure? Here, go ahead.
I ain't never ever seen you act like this before. You getting buckets. How you feel?
Hey, I need you to turn down the court and build me a new court.
Yeah, because Bradley Beal getting buckets. I ain't never, ever.
That was probably an Emmy Award-winning interview. I just lost my job. Congratulations. We'll see you in L.A.
My man. I appreciate it.
Incredible. So the best part about it is that Bradley Beal is attempting to be professional and like hold it together, but you can tell that obviously John Wall is like doing something. And then when the camera pulls out and cuts to him, who he's then like given the microphone, and I guess we'll have just played this, so you heard the context, but yeah, just a great moment.
It's fun because if you watch it back and listen to it back, you can hear a distant John Wall, and this is what Bradley Beal is laughing about. You can hear John Wall in the background going, I never ever. like, you're getting bucket buckets. Like, you hear him say the stuff that he eventually says to him,
yeah,
like, from farther away. So that's what makes Bradley Beal laugh. I don't know what Bradley Beal's answer of, you got to tear down the court and build me a new court. What does that mean? Do you have any idea what that means?
No, it feels like a reference to something that we don't have context for.
Right. Feels like a reference to something, but I also really appreciate the post-game interview or afterwards being like, oh man, John, I just lost my job to John Wall. It's really good. It's just like the way John Wall says it, like full ear-to-ear smile. It's so kind. Like, it just seems so fun. Just like, you're getting bucket buckets. How you feel? Like, he's just so pleasant. And the fact that John Wall, the fact that he's wearing like the NBA Thermaflex hoodie, like with the hood all the way up, just like really adds to the comedy of it. And it's just such a wholesome moment.
It almost sounds like Eddie Murphy doing Donkey and Shrek. Like, that's like kind of the cadence of it.
It's just really fun. I think there is, like, there's been enough people in the comments that it like was kind of a reference to some like YouTube content creator that I wasn't familiar with. But regardless, just like the pure pleasant nature in which John Wall asks him, you getting bucket buckets, how you feel, is just great. And just a plus note from the encore interviewer to just like fully understand, like, let's do the fun moment. He brings in John, like hands him the mic.
Right.
It's just delightful. I always enjoyed John Wall and his antics and his basketball play. I think he's criminally underrated and undervalued. And I just think him asking Bradley Beal how he feels about getting bucket buckets is just so wonderful. Just so wonderful.
It's great. Yeah, I think that's it's a very fine line. I think if you're a sideline reporter where like you have to be professional and do your job, but you also have to like understand the moment and realize that there are times where like you got to just let someone be silly and, you know, kind of take over the interview for you. I feel like you'll see this more in baseball, obviously, because it's like outdoors. But when there's like a walk-off hit and they're doing an interview and then the Gatorade thing happens, mm-hmm. everyone loves it. And I think you feel this way also as someone who like understands what audio equipment costs. There's always a part of me that's like, that's a really expensive mic and a really expensive headset. Just don't do that. But, you know.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm sure these sports franchises and media companies can pay for it. But there's got to be one person at MLB Network who's like, God damn it.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
We just got that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are the bucket buckets. You're getting bucket buckets. Oh, just so good. Bucket buckets. I love it. So that is the top three best interview video bombs and times the players grabbed the mic. Thanks for listening to this episode of War Sources, hosted by Adam Mamawala and Mike Schubert. Our editor is Kensei Suramaki. The music is by Bettina Capomanis. The art's by Allison Wakeman. The website is by Kelly Schubert. And the social media is by both of the Horse Boys.
Thank you to our producer-level patrons, Polly Bird, Self Tortesta, Siobhan Ellsbury, Doko Chasing Taco Falls, Bang, Bang, Roast Beef Debris, Denver Steam Nuggets, Anna Reed, Steph Curry for 4,000 threes. I mean, you round that up, that's basically 4,000.
Yeah.
Hi Trish, hi Allie, Jason Derulo, Naked Rachel, Sidney Crosby is a vampire, Chelsea's cousin Ginger, Spurs boy, balls to the walls, Mats Furley, and Utah Jash. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Horse Hoops and on Twitter at Horse_Hoops because...
Horse Hoops is actually the person in charge of the pyrotechnics at the Disturbed show.
No.
And... had to get it shut down. You goofed.
Banned from Twitter and from the United Center.
You would think.
Henceforth. Toot sweet. Mm. You can go to our website, horsehoops.com, for links to some of the many things we talked about today, including photo and video bombing, interviews, some very cool stuff about the life and legacy of Junior Bridgman, and much, much more.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to support the Horse Boys, you can do it in a couple ways. You can go to Patreon, patreon.com/horsehoops. You can get ad-free episodes, early release episodes, extra content, lots of good stuff over there. Then you can also go to horsehoops.com/merch and you can get Sup Nerds shirts before we sell out of them. And we also have digital items you can get that we'll never sell out of because the internet is eternal. And so is our presence on the internet. But you can download
scary, actually. Yeah.
You can download. That's gonna be weird. Yeah. I like what someone could be listening to this. I mean, if the earth still exists, mm-hmm. like 150 years from now, and that's bizarre.
It is weird.
It's super strange. Like, oh wow, remember when they used to play basketball? Not in, I don't know, on the moon? Like, who knows, man? Who knows? But you can get digital merchandise at horsehoops.com/merch as well. Now, we're going to conclude this episode by putting our hands in the middle. and saying something on the count of three.
I think just a fun, like, you getting bucket buckets. That's like a
Bucket buckets on three. Yeah. Beautiful.
One, two, three.
You getting bucket buckets.
Bucket buckets. Yeah, I don't know.
You got to tear me down a court and build me a new court. Why does John Wall have to do that? That seems like so much work for John.
It does. But you know what? He seems ready for the task.
Yeah, look, he can clearly jump into other people's roles. So he needs to jump into arena construction. He's on the case.
Love it.